Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the South Fork. I am Nancy Arnold, interim minister with this congregation, and I'm very happy to see you all slipping and sliding your way here today. It's good to have company. This is a shared ministry. I lead services here two or three times a month, and the other services are led by worship associates or guest speakers. The services vary from week to week, so we suggest that you attend five or six services to appreciate the diversity of the worship experience here if you're new to the congregation. Do we have any visitors this morning? No, I didn't think so. Your second time, you're no longer a visitor, just so that you know that. I call your attention to the announcements in the order of service. Do we have any other congregation-related announcements this morning? Myrna.
The Social Justice Committee is conducting a letter-writing campaign for the town board regarding language access for people, especially for government services. Sylvia Baruch and I have written a sample letter. We have all the directions and who to write to. And so see me after service.
Thank you. We extend thanks to Abby Fleming today for once again bringing her musical gifts to us, to Kent Martin for being the worship associate, and to Jean for assisting with setup. I think she's already gone. And also to Tina Curran, who is going to lead our first message this morning before the children leave. And now as we prepare our minds and our hearts for worship, please silence all electronic devices until the service has ended. Come into this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and power and let its vision change your heart. I invite you to read in unison as we light the chalice this morning the words that are printed in your order of service. We gather this hour
as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life we share together.
invite you to rise in body or in spirit to join in singing hymn number 163, For the Earth Forever Turning.
Today we're talking about holistic ways of healing, and most of my life, actually I hate to say this, but I first studied Tai Chi in 1972, I think you probably know how long ago that was, and have been studying those things ever since. And we're going to do a little bit of Qigong today, so an associate art of Tai Chi. I wanted to say that these are ancient Chinese exercises. And one of the things that I realize is that seems that in the course of my lifetime, we've begun to reach into all of our heritages for the healing modalities that have existed over millennia that had become lost for a while. And so I have had the honor of reaching into this one particular tradition, the ancient Chinese tradition. And one of the things I find that really exists in these traditions and that we had lost sight of, and I think we've regained and are regaining, is that the oneness of the body and the mind, that they are not two separate things, that we don't decide something and then our body, that it all is happening as one organism. I can't say I always experience myself that way, but sometimes, and so we're going to do a few exercises with that in mind. I also want to introduce a few Chinese words in case you don't know them. The first one is the Tao. You've all heard that word, right? T-A-O, not D-O-W. And I was trying to, you know, that Lao Tzu, a great Chinese philosopher, has said the Tao that can be expressed is not the eternal Tao, meaning you can't really say what the Tao is, right? But here we are in the West, and we haven't grown up with this word in our lives. So I was trying to think of a way to, am I too loud? I was trying to think of a way to say what the Tao is, and I remember this book I read when I was when my daughter was a little child called Grover and the Everything in the Whole Wide World Museum. And do you know that book? Yeah, I love that book. And so it's about Grover the Muppet, and he goes into this museum, right? And the museum has a room that is called Cities, and a room that's called Dogs, and a room that has snakes, and maybe another room that has paintings. And another room that has television sets. And then at the end of the book, Grover opens the door and it says, in the last room in the museum is everything else. And so in a way that for me conveyed this feeling of the Tao as being, there's no way to define it. It is everything else and every specific thing. But it is also Grover's path through that museum. He, for him as an individual, his Tao was to go into the room with the cities and then into the room with the paintings and so on. So that's the Tao, and we're going to embrace the Tao. So I'm going to ask you all to stand up.
I don't know if this light will work,
but please be sure that you are where you can see me. And we're going to do an exercise or a position called embracing the Tao. Can you all hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
So first, we want to connect ourselves to the Tao, to our Tao. And we're going to do that by imagining from the center of the top of the head, you can even put your finger there, an infinitely strong golden thread that goes up to the center of the heavens. You can let your eyes not close, but be relaxed. And let yourself hang from that thread. So really feel the change in your body as your skeleton relies on that thread to hold you up. You may feel that your spine can relax and all the vertebrae of the spine can hang like pearls on a string. You want your feet to be a little bit further apart than usual. Keep your connection with the heavens through that golden thread and become aware of the bottoms of your feet. Become aware of the soles of your feet inside your socks and your shoes and your boots. And then through your socks and your shoes and your boots and the floor and the basement, feel the earth. Feel the energy of the earth with your feet. And just be aware of your breath and how each breath begins deep, deep in your belly. The breath fills your lungs from the bottom to the top. But just be aware of the breath beginning in the belly. Let your attention rest there as your feet still connect to the energy of the center of the earth and your head is hanging from the heavens. And we're going to move the body right from the belly. So let's let your hips turn. And then let your hips bring your arms up. So the movement all happens as one. So this position we call embracing the Tao. Keep your awareness on your breath. You're embracing the big picture, the everything in the whole wide world picture, and you're also embracing your moment within that, your path of life, and where you are right now, and what's around you right now. See if you can stay with it. Letting everything relax. Because you're hanging from the heavens, that's what holds you up. Not your muscles, not your shoulders, not your back. The earth and the heavens hold you up, and your attention rests in the belly. Imagine in your belly, deep in your belly, a little golden dot. And let that dot grow so it fills you. And with each breath, let it grow more. So it fills your whole body and surrounds you. And then it fills this room, merging with everyone else's golden circles. And it continues to grow right out into the icy cold and fills and surrounds our town. A sphere of golden light with your belly, that point in your belly as its center. And let your sphere keep growing till it becomes as big as the earth. And let it keep growing till it holds the sun and all the planets.
keep growing past our galaxy as far as you can comprehend. And then let it come back. With your breath, bring your sphere back to our solar system, our planet, and back to your belly. And let your arms down. Let your feet be a little further apart. We're going to do one more. And we're going to imagine that we are bears. We're going to shift the weight from one foot to the other foot. And we're going to let the hips turn at each shift. You're going to be holding a little sphere. And it will turn over at the end of each shift. This exercise is called the constant bear. Can you pretend you're a bear? Can you really feel your bear fur? Your heavy bones? The relaxation of your movements? Actually, it's deep winter now, so most of the bears are under the ground in their caves, hibernating. So let's imagine that we are the bear dreaming that it's back outside. The constant bear. And my teacher used to say, when you do this exercise, remain in a good mood. But he also used to say that this exercise, if you do it regularly every day, will, he was very particular about the way he said this. He didn't say it will heal anything that's wrong with you. He said, but whatever is bothering you will no longer dominate your life. Feel the weight all the way over one foot, all the way over the other. Feel your sphere. You might be able to actually feel it now between your hands. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Each week when we bring our joys, concerns, and hopes to this gathering, we honor the sacred circle of the life we share together. Let us bring into this circle those who were unable to be here today, those from whom we may be separated, and those who might need a helping hand or a caring heart. If you have a personal joy or sorrow to share, please raise your hand. I will bring you a microphone while Kent lights a candle representing this community's love and care. Please say your name, speak directly into the microphone, and please be brief. Would you light one last candle for the joys, hopes, and concerns not expressed here this morning? You may also come forward during the offertory music, and light a candle in silence. We hold in the heart of this community those whose candles speak for them, those who are ill or grieving, those whose pain may be too great to name, and a world community so in need of healing. In the stillness of a shared silence, let us hold them and each other gently in the strength and comfort of this religious community. May our hearts be open to all who have entered this circle in thought or in name, and may love be our guide in this life we share together. Amen. We give and receive in many different ways to support this congregation and its mission. The basket that is passed will hold the gifts that sustain the spirit of hospitality and care that make everyone feel welcome here. And the bowl on the back table will accept your gifts for the Helping Hand Fund and the Minister's Discretionary Fund that supports the community beyond these walls. The morning offering will now be gratefully received. Thank you. Let's enter into a time of meditation by singing hymn number 1009, Meditation on Breathing. We'll sing it through three times. From the Upanishads and then be in silence together. The breath of life is one. When we speak, life speaks. When we see, life sees. When we hear, life hears. When we think, life thinks. When we breathe, life breathes. It is the consciousness of life which becomes the breath of life and gives life to a body. The breath of life is the consciousness of life, and the consciousness of life is the breath of life. Tina said earlier that she had experienced the oneness of body and spirit, however fleetingly. Do any of you remember a time when you felt as if everything was in sync? You felt really healthy and centered, whole and at peace? Some of you. I can almost recall that. But I do know that such a way of being in the world existed, at least once upon a time. Once upon a time when the word health meant whole. There was a unity that existed between body and soul, and what some might call the life force, that spoke of an original wholeness. We might think of it as the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I believe that we human beings have a natural inclination toward wholeness. I believe that we're born with integrity, an original wholeness from which no part can be taken away, as one medical ethicist puts it. This wholeness exists in more than in the physical sense. It is our original wholeness that makes us who we are, no matter what our limitations or particular conditions. And it is that original wholeness to which all can lay claim. Ancient Greeks practiced the art of healing. Healing means to make whole. In the physician's oath, Hippocrates swore to keep pure and holy both my life and my art. The treatment of sick people emphasized diet and hygiene of body and soul. With the greater understanding of anatomy, medicine became the treatment of sick organs. And gradually treating the whole person became a lost art. And the practice of medicine became the realm of science and technology. The unity that once existed between body and the life force split as more was learned about human anatomy. Treatment became more specialized. It led to a mechanistic view of healthcare. In The Death of Nature, Carolyn Merchant suggests that through technological advances, machines became extensions of human power, able to fulfill our desire to order life. Men like Descartes imposed their philosophy and their knowledge of science to separate body from soul. The machine metaphor he used was based on a dualism as opposed to a unity. It was a dualism between body and soul. He thought that as an incredible machine, the human body operated according to the same mechanical laws as a clock or other machines, and that its repair was achieved by medical intervention rather than left to the healing powers of nature. So what happened to the soul in this separation? Well, in his scheme of things, it became an external operator that could imitate God in directing the world from the outside. The emphasis shifted from health as wholeness to one in which the parts of the human body could be fixed without affecting the whole. Stefan Zweig describes this transition really well, I think. The physician puts himself beside the priest, and very soon against him. Disease is no longer something which concerns the whole person, but something which hits one of the organs. The laboratory keeps the doctor from practical insight into the personality of the patient. The hospital keeps the doctor from personal contact with the patient. The expert in every section of body and soul replaces the family doctor. People mind that the healer has become a scientist. They feel instinctively that disease is not localized, but concerns the whole constitution, the body as well as psyche and spirit. Zweig wrote that in 1931. And I believe that his words are even truer today. The philosophy of Descartes has been aided by greater advances in technology. The body as machine is no longer simply a metaphor. Body parts are kept alive or replaced by actual machines, sometimes with little regard for the integrity of the whole person. This is not to suggest that advances in technology and medicine are deterrents to wellness, but they can become detrimental when they're separated from treating the whole person, as our Western medical care promotes. For whatever reason, I have always known that good health, the wellness of the whole, was our intended lot in life. And yet too often I forget what I know to be true. I believe that our essential unity, our wholeness, can be viewed scientifically and organically. This unity is what physician Herbert Benson calls a remembered wellness. He says we carry that within us, this remembered wellness. I believe that we all have the capacity to be healers, and it is that memory in us that calls us back to a sense of wellness, the memory grounded in our beliefs and in our hopes. It's just as important as the medical treatment that we might receive. Our nature as human beings is to color our reality with hopes, emotions, philosophies, and convictions. And if we believe it is our nature to be whole, then the memory of our original integrity reunites body with soul, restoring us to wellness. There's a lot of evidence that our individual beliefs affect the healing process. Although it might seem ironic, that is why hospice teams include a chaplain or a spiritual care counselor, in addition to a physician, a registered nurse, and a social worker. In addition to the team of caregivers, hospice patients are usually offered some alternative treatments such as acupuncture, massage, or Reiki. Hospice is not about curing an illness. It's intended to provide comfort care for the whole person, often after he or she has exhausted all other avenues of medical treatment. Hospice or palliative care may be a patient's first experience with the notion of healing as opposed to curing. Cure means to recover from a disease. Healing is possible even if a body is not cured of disease, because it employs techniques that are grounded in the belief that the whole person suffers when one part is diseased. Among my tasks as a hospice chaplain, I invited patients to reflect back on their lives, to reconcile relationships and reframe hope and meaning each day. And I will always remember a woman named Mary, with whom I did some of this. Our last conversation, she talked about the highlights of her life. And she concluded, on the whole, it's been a pretty crummy life. She died the next day with that in her mind, of the crummy life that she had, ready to meet God, who she was no longer all that happy with. So when I'm having a bad day and things aren't going as I planned, I remember Mary and I think, do I want my last memory to be of a crummy life? And for me, that's when the path toward wellness begins again. There is a great deal of evidence linking mind, body, and spirit in the work of healing. Lawrence Sullivan suggests that the creativity of a culture is actually the response to the reality of sickness. He believes that healing renews our creative powers and restores us to people who are vital, stirring, strong, and whole. I believe that there's a reason we experience pain and illness. I agree with feminist educator Margot Adair, who suggests that health problems are simply the body's healthy response to a situation that is not healthy. Unlike other cultures, our society discourages us from looking at ourselves in the context of a whole picture. We learn early on to separate the emotional, the intuitive, and the spiritual from our everyday lives. Western medicine has conditioned us to view our bodies as made up of separate functioning parts that are prone to break down, and to believe that only specialists can do the repair work. We have come to believe that we are powerless victims, unable to take care of ourselves in the midst of hazards, or else we blame ourselves for our health problems. We can learn from other cultures how to treat illness differently. In Islam, for instance, illness is understood to be a great blessing. This blessing offers the opportunity to those suffering to become closer to God. When one asks a Muslim, "How are you?" the response is always the same, "Alhamdulillah," all praise belongs to God. No matter what suffering has been endured, it is not the pain that is mentioned. Instead, they praise God for their state of being, whatever that might be. For the Kung people, healing is more than simply curing through the application of medicine. It's fundamental and integrating force that takes the whole person into account in all aspects and situations. It involves work on the individual, on the group, and the surrounding environment and cosmos. The Kung emphasize sharing and egalitarianism. Its vital life is in the spirit and the strong community. It's all expressed and supported by the healing tradition. The healing is directed at alleviating physical illness in an individual as much as toward enhancing the healer's understanding, as much toward resolving conflict in the village as toward establishing a proper relationship with gods and the cosmos. A healing may be specifically directed toward one of these focuses, but the healing, in fact, affects them all. According to poet Audre Lorde, African tradition deals with life as an experience to be lived, not unlike the Muslim tradition. In many respects, it is much like Eastern philosophies or Native American beliefs, in that we see ourselves as part of a life force, she says. We are joined, for instance, to the air and to the earth. As part of the whole life process, we live in accordance with the rest of the world as a whole. For Africans, living becomes an experience rather than a problem, no matter how bad or how painful it may be. Audre Lorde was a self-described Black, lesbian, mother, warrior, poet. She died of breast cancer more than 20 years ago. But she died only after she had learned to live with breast cancer. and to let it teach her and others what it meant to be whole, even as she watched her own body deteriorate. Part of her journey toward wholeness and wellness is recorded in the cancer journals. She wrote early on about the impact of the illness on her life and how it affected everyone around her. For years, Audre Lorde had been an outsider in her own culture. Sister outsider, she called herself. And yet her memorial service was held at St. John the Divine in Manhattan, so that thousands of mourners could pay tribute to her life. She believed that she was part of a whole life process. By her living and by her dying, she restored her connection to the whole. It seems important somehow for the scientific community to lend credence to what many of us have always known, that there is no such thing as value-free research or thinking. Practitioners who serve us with a detached attitude of professionalism set themselves apart from, or even above, the patients that they treat. That is how a phenomenon like remembered wellness, which affects healing, gets dismissed as the placebo effect. What a person believes is not measurable, therefore it cannot be counted as part of a cure. Healing the whole might be seen as a way of restoring a spiritual balance to ourselves and to our culture. For Margot Adair, healing our culture would reclaim all that has been denied in ourselves. Instead of the Western medical model that defines health as the absence of disease, healing our culture would restore health to its original intention, the well-being of the whole. There are health practitioners who treat the whole person and not just the diseased parts of a person. I first encountered one when I injured my back more than 25 years ago. When the healer asked me, "When was the last time you concentrated on centering yourself?" She was honoring my whole person and asking me a question I didn't want to think about. The pain in my back was a symptom of what was out of balance in my life. The pain was a blessing, because it forced me to review how I was living. I made many changes in order to heal my back. When the pain comes back, it acts as a barometer that activates when I'm in overdrive. The pain forces me to pause, to take stock, and then regroup if I'm paying attention. Sometimes I don't. I believe that our bodies are always giving us information. For example, ailing body parts may indicate underlying life practices that bear consideration. Tightness in the throat or in the chest suggests that we're not living life as fully and authentically as we would like. Back problems can reflect fear or a lack of trust in life. Cancer manifests toxic negative emotions that we harbor, primarily anger, hate, resentment, and grief. A link has been found between acute psycho-emotional trauma and the onset of cancer 18 to 24 months later. I learned this the hard way when 2 years to the month after moving from Ohio to New York, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. The move was difficult on many levels, and I still think of it as one of the most regrettable choices of my life. After sitting with the diagnosis of breast cancer, I recognized that all the anger, grief, resentment, and regret I was carrying had taken its toll. Because the impact of the move on my well-being had not been addressed adequately, the built-up negative emotions needed to be excised surgically from my body. When choosing treatment for breast cancer, I settled on a combination of Western and Eastern practices. Yes, I opted for surgery followed by chemotherapy and radiation, but the side effects from the treatment were alleviated by weekly acupuncture, massage, special teas and foods recommended by the integrative physician I consulted, and daily meditation. Once again, I was given an opportunity to make changes that restored me to wellness. In Care of the Soul, Thomas More suggests that we can view the body as art such as the ancient Greeks did, or as machines, such as Descartes instituted. If we view the body as art, we can learn from what it expresses to us. If we view the body as machine, then we'll continue to treat its malfunctions as something outside of ourselves. As a machine, the body lends itself to a cure. As art, the body invites healing. I believe that we are all healers and that we are all called to be whole. Together, I believe that we have the potential of healing ourselves and healing the whole, once again restoring harmony to creation. Wellness is more than simply the absence of sickness. Wellness grows out of an inner awareness that seeks our original wholeness as human beings. That original wholeness, our integrity, guides us toward wellness of body, mind, and spirit. If we allow ourselves to remember what it meant to be whole and healthy, so be it. Let's join in singing our closing hymn, number 298. We're going to sing verses 1, 3, and 5. Standing. Someday we'll try a circle. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of
truth, the warmth of unity, or the fire of commitment.
These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and be wholly ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of being common to us all and to all living things. Let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and towards all living beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. With humility, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and on earth. Blessed be.